go.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Elite Rugby Banter. It's been a little while since we've been in your ears, but there's obviously, as always, been lots of rugby going on. So we will try and cover as much as we can in the last month or so of rugby. Andrew is still off in the bush somewhere. So unfortunately tonight I'm only joined by Phil. Phil, how are you doing? You didn't get blown away this weekend?
No, I managed to stay on my own feet. I had one beer or two beers blown away, or at least the top of the beer sitting in the stadium. But all in all, good times ahead. We've got a lot of rugby to cover, as you say. I think we're even going to the end of the Six Nations. The last time we spoke, we had one more weekend left. So URC, Six Nations, European Rugby or Champions Cup, all of that to discuss. And of course, Super Rugby as well.
And MLR, Varsity Cup. I'm pretty sure there's a club competition going on. You want to chat about the Paul Roos under-13s? I think you're following them quite closely, looking for the next Billy Roo.
Yeah, Paul Roos are going well. They're under-13s. I believe they're unbeaten this season. No, I have no idea. But it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Cool. Then as you said, we've got a lot to get into. So let's jump straight into it. Six Nations wrap-up. Ireland not quite squeaking in the end, but there was a risk if a bunch of different results didn't go their way of taking the win, finishing off with a very uncomfortable victory with Scotland. In a very low scoring game. I don't think that was kind of what most people predicted. England and France competing in probably the best game of the tournament, England losing out narrowly at the end. And then Italy, dominating Wales. The scoreline very much battling Wales with a couple of late tries. An interesting final round of results. What did you kind of make of it?
Yeah, I think, like you say, Ireland sort of made a bit harder work of it than we would have thought. I think Scotland also scored a late try there just to make it seem closer, but Ireland just struggling to get tries on the board. I think they just scored a couple of front row tries. So nothing too spectacular from their side. Maybe that bodes well. I'm sure we can discuss a little bit of some Springbok anticipation. But you and I are obviously both very excited to see Ireland come to our shores and both feeling relatively optimistic about it for sure. England.
I would say so. I think particularly with the way that Ireland would cracking in the Six Nations. And obviously they started with that really strong victory over France. But it turned out that France actually just weren't firing for the whole tournament. And conversely, Ireland seemed to stutter more and more as the tournament went on. Is that your feeling as well, or is that just me being optimistic?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, they've had a couple of players out. We've seen guys like Calvin Nash come in for Mac Hansen. A couple of other players have been unavailable. But I agree with what you're saying. But at the same time, I can't wait to see them come here. It's going to be an amazing tournament. France have been a weird one, though. I mean, they still finished second, right? Despite, as you say, they had a very shaky tournament.
I think that's more just because everyone was really mid. I mean, Ireland were comfortably the best team, but not maybe quite hitting their own highs. But the rest of the tournament, Scotland had one good performance. England started horribly and they found some form towards the end, whereas France were, a draw against Italy, or a missed dodgy kick against France, against Italy from losing that game, and then, the very controversial finish against Scotland. So, they finished with three wins in second, but they very easily could have been fighting with Wales for the wooden spoon.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds extreme, but it is sort of true, and their discipline was bad.
Well, one win from five. That's where they would have been,
Yeah, and they had two red cards in the tournament. Things just looked like they were, they looked in disarray pretty much, without some key players and, the disappointment of the World Cup. It's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back in the next couple of years.
Who are they touring in June? I think it's Argentina or Scotland going to Argentina.
Is it Japan? No, they did Japan last year.
England are playing a game against Japan.
Okay, and England are playing New Zealand. So it might be Australia?
Australia? No, Wales are going to Australia.
Oh, Wales. Okay, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know where the rest of them are going. But anyway, the point is they should be able to pick up a couple of wins if they're not playing Argentina, because I think Argentina would fancy themselves of at least one win or getting it close.
I
think we can talk about Italy, because that was a very exciting finish. You know, and they started strong against that with their first half against England, and then beat Scotland, and obviously pumped Wales. Good draw against France, should have won that game, you know.
Yeah.
Was this 6 months too late for them for the World Cup?
Oh, it's a frustrating one. Like, as much as we enjoy watching Italy, we always seem to be let down by the turning decent performances into good results, and they definitely had some good results here. But what's weird is they still finished fifth despite having a better, you know, games record than Scotland. They were just didn't get as many bonus points, but definitely a successful Six Nations and one that they could build on. If you think this is the first tournament under a new coach, even if there was not that much difference, we know, yeah, Menoncello got player of the tournament. He's still like 21 or 22. He's a massive prospect. Yep. And his partnership with Ignacio Brix is really exciting for Italy and also for Benetton. So definitely a lot of positives to take out of it. And we just have to hope that they can build on it. We've been disappointed by Italy in the past too often, you know, just not able to convert what looks like potential into some more stability. What do you think? Do you think this is a first step into greener pastures?
I think so. I think I'm a bit more optimistic. I think if you think about the generations of players for the most part, you know, they kind of all broke through around that 2019-2020 mark. Yeah. So this is, and they were all playing, you know, for the national team at like 2021. Now they kind of, that core set of players like Garbisi and Lamaro, like now they've all had three or four international seasons steering the team around, and they kind of are hitting their straps a little bit. And I think that's really helping. That's maturity at international level. They've been in these situations a bit more, and they are starting to convert those close losses into draws, into wins. You know, two wins and a draw, which should have been a win, is by far their best return in the Six Nations for a very long time. And then on top of that, if you look at the way Benetton's going, they've, you know, sitting top four in the URC or top five in the URC at the moment. And even Zebra, like, obviously they're still coming last, but they're not the whipping boys they used to be. You know, they are definitely improving and being more competitive. And I think the final thing is, if you just look at the under-20s results, you know, obviously they beat us in South Africa last year in the under-20s. And I think they went really well in the Six Nations under-20s recently as well. So there seems to be a lot of investments in growth and development in Italy over the last 8-ish years. It's kind of all starting to come together into success at the top level now, which is exciting to see. So hopefully this, as you say, this isn't just another false dawn, another flash in the pan, another bit of hope that's going to get dashed against the rocks in the short term.
Yeah, let's hope so. And they also have been blooding a couple of new players. Someone like Louis Leiner obviously decided to play for Italy. He had options between Italy, Australia, and England. So he had a try-scoring debut. They can just keep, you know, as you say, the under-20s are looking good. So they just keep producing these players. And Menoncello too, just having outstanding performances. Let's hope that Italy can push on.
Yeah, I'd be really lucky to see. We can touch quickly on Wales. I don't think there is much to talk about apart from them just looking there. And they're just, I mean, the regions are just in so much disarray. It's really difficult to see them turning it around, you know, conversely to the Italian situation where there does seem to be growth at all levels. Wales at all levels seems to be in a dark place.
Yeah, I'd go with that too. And especially under a seasoned coach, you know, as I said, Italy, it's their first tournament under a new coach. So Wales would take this tournament, you know, obviously Winspoon losing 5 out of 5 is nothing short of a disaster. I think the only bright things for them is also perhaps just a couple of youngsters starting to come through, guys like Cam Winnett, and I think it's Alex Mann in the loose forwards. But they've also, I mean, we've spoken about, I think it's Dapit Jenkins is their really young captain. It seems like yeah, just almost too many young players and not enough experience. But also their experienced guys are just guys like Josh Adams and George North and Adam Beard, who are decent players. These are like lions, but they're not like influential players in the team who are going to really pull you up. So it's like sort of Adams on the wing and Beard is good in the line out, but not players who are going to sort of improve your team by that much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. Again, the key difference is that the young players haven't had the same amount of time as the Italians have at the top level. Depth of being, 21 or 22 or something. It'll be interesting to see how they turn around. And Scotland's the other interesting one where, I suppose, they just seem like similar to Italy, but just a bit more mature in that they offer so much promise and often fail to deliver. If they hadn't lost to France, they would have been going into the Italian game with a bit more confidence, but suddenly you're looking at they only got 3 wins as well. And there was a lot of hope for them to win, be pushing for the title before, or at least be challenging for a Grand Slam and title in Dublin.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they just wish they could play England every week, because that seems to be where they've been performing the best, and especially Duan van der Merwe. He's just making it look easy every time he plays against England. But ultimately a pretty disappointing tournament for them as well. Like, a lot of promise with very little to take home from it, like a fourth place.
Yeah, but I think that's a pretty good summary of the Six Nations. We can leapfrog straight into URC for a very quick chat before we go on to Champions Cup, I think, which is probably the more interesting talking point. The URC has still got a 5 or 6 rounds before it gets super pointy, and it remains to be very congested. So I think there's, only 6 points or so between, 3rd and 9th or 10th. So
yeah,
it's still all to play for. I think the South African teams are going to hope that their run of home games towards the end of the season really pays through. I think only the Stormers and Sharks still have to travel, whereas Bulls and Lions are home for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Or at least in South Africa for the rest of the year. So, yeah, there should be a bit of climbing. I think particularly the Bulls and Stormers would like to try and consolidate as close to their top 4 as possible, or at least avoid Leinster in the quarterfinals. So, Leinster seems to just click on, though. But I think, I don't know if there's too much more to talk about there apart from, the Sharks finally getting a couple of wins.
It's
the biggest turkey talking point.
Yeah, we'll speak about it with the European matches as well. Obviously, Sharks have turned a little bit of a corner, I guess. It started in the URC, where I think they beat Edinburgh, who they're also playing in the next round of the Challenge Cup. A combination, I guess, of having some of their Springboks back, which didn't make all the difference, but just generally a bit more, positivity in their team. Even someone like Masuku has gotten a solid run of games together. We haven't seen him before the last few games, and I think he's really showing something. Maybe it's just not having Kerwin Bosch at fly half is making more of a difference. But I think the Sharks can at least look a bit more forward to the rest of the season, given what's come already. It's been a nightmare for them. And from the Lions' perspective, it was a really, really great win over Connacht. But then after that, unfortunately, they couldn't follow up with a disappointing loss to Ospreys. So as you said, the log is really close. So if they can get a few wins at home against some of the big Irish teams, then they still have a chance to finish top 8. And the Bulls and Stormers, I think they're 3rd and 5th at the moment. So as you say, they're just looking to keep on adding to what they already have.
I mean, it would be incredible if all 4 South African teams qualified for the Champions Cup next year, which is not unreasonable. The Sharks, just on form and on paper, are obviously one of the strongest sides in the Challenge Cup, not form withstanding. And the Lions, as you say, who could sneak into the top 8, which would be very cool in the URC. But I think, that's as good a time they need to jump into the Challenge Cup and speak about the Sharks very quickly. I think the things that you mentioned are very valid, getting players back. But I think that something that hasn't been mentioned nearly enough is, the Sharks were carrying an injury list of 30 players for the first half of the season. They've still got, 12 players injured on their books. I don't know what's been happening there and whether they've hired the Aussie F&C coach from last year. But it's difficult to be competitive when you just have that many holes in your squad. And so I think now that they've finally got a bit of more stability in the team, it does help. And hopefully this is a sign of things to come. The last two teams they knocked off, Edinburgh and Ulster, are hardly no-name teams. You know, so hopefully this does mean that they're finally getting some cohesion in their game. But it was a very good start to the playoffs in the Challenge Cup for them, with a very comfortable cruising win over Zebra. Some very nice flashes of play. I mean, I think you've mentioned Masuka, who's, you know, started the last couple of games now with Bosch being on the bench. He's been a brilliant player. I think, you know, the people that have been following him know what he can do. They saw him at the Cheetahs. So it's been exciting to see what he can do. And yeah, just to, like, some of the other new guys coming to the team, someone like Ethan Hooker, who's been really great to watch coming through there.
Yeah. And I think one other guy who he sort of had flashes throughout the season, but he's been struggling a bit with his consistency, is Apalela Fassi. So hopefully he can just keep building too and earn his way back into a potential Springbok squad. But he's always someone who can make something happen from the back. I think it was 2 weeks ago he scored that magical try where he just broke through from his own half.
Yeah. I mean, I think Fassi's at risk of falling into the Bosch situation, where has moments of brilliance at Super Rugby level, but just isn't consistent enough or doing the dirty work enough to really be a Springbok. So, I mean, I do, again, hope that Fassi turns that corner. And I still, you know, I mean, I'm not for any hope of myself or anything, but also as a Sharks supporter, but just, you know, Bosch has that talent as well. And you really hope he goes to a club where he can kind of fix those deficiencies of his game and deliver on the promise that he does have, you know, because he's a talented player. I mean, coming off the bench this weekend, scored a try with his first touch, which was disallowed, and then scored it just off the next kick, cook receipt, just ran through literally the whole team. You know, started the touchdown conversion, you know, like, he's always got that ability to just do incredibly good things. And yeah, it's just sad that he's never really consistently delivered that. So yeah, hopefully he can find that somewhere, and hopefully Fassi can find the consistency that Bosch never did. But yeah, it'll be exciting to see how the Sharks go there. I mean, obviously at home Edinburgh this weekend, and it's got a good chance of really going deep in the Challenge Cup. The Lions, unfortunately, not getting it done against Benetton.
Yeah, so disappointing. I mean, going into the match, I think, while it's tough, you know, travelling to Italy, there's still it's still a winnable game. So to come away with the loss, even though, you know, 10 points is not a terrible loss, but Benetton also played almost a whole half a man down. It's just disappointing in the sense that the performance wasn't quite there. The consistency, especially away from home, doesn't seem to be there. They, like I said, the performance, I think, against Connacht was their best of the season, and I was really hoping it would be built upon, but it seems to have dropped a bit since then. So yeah, the Lions are out of the Challenge Cup, and hopefully we'll just be able to focus on the URC. And unfortunately, the Cheetahs are also out, so they lost to Clermont in France. Obviously, they aren't playing in the URC, so they still have the SA Cup, I think it's called, to come back to.
Yeah.
But it would be
important. They took 50 from Griquas this weekend, so yeah. You know, they need to call the big guns back.
And they got smashed by the Pumas the week before, so
Yeah.
So they're struggling to obviously put out two teams in two different competitions, but now they'll be able to focus on one. But it would have been nice to see them get a really big result away in France. They just lost by 5 points, so another close one.
Yeah. And speaking of close losses, this one was particularly heartbreaking. And we were both there at the stadium on Saturday. What was really just a titanic affair. I mean, seeing the size of Will Skelton in person, he is monstrous. Like, I went there with my work colleagues, and granted, not many of them are rugby fans, but they'd heard of this Will Skelton chap, and they just were all just blown away by the size of this human. And just while we're on, quick shout out to him for just pulling out one of the, I think, sportsmanship moments of rugby, I suppose, for the last couple of years. Is dominant carry inside the 22, their team's behind against someone, Murat, kind of knocks them out.
Yeah.
Realizes this, and by the next phase, he already signals to the ref and kind of forming a human bridge over Murat to protect him from the next phase, which was almost on top of him. So yeah, he very genuinely held players with Murat. The awareness, the care, it's just really good values to see that kind of stuff, particularly in opposed to some of the other values we'll chat about a bit later, I think. What were your kind of main takeaways from the Stormers game?
Yeah, it was really disappointing. I mean, I don't think it was a terrible performance, but I think when you're 16-0 up after like 45 minutes at home in a big knockout game, that's disappointing. Perhaps, you know, the wind playing two separate halves sort of into the wind and against the wind, they needed to just make more of that advantage count in the first half. But I think they would be disappointed to let it go. Obviously, scoring a try right at the end was really good, and then Livock missing, and as we've said, it was really, really tough conditions. And no, I don't think anyone's holding the result against Livock, but it was just too little, too late, I guess. And it felt like they were just, I don't know, do you think they were outgunned? Like, La Rochelle obviously are reigning champs. They have a lot of big name players. Someone like Aldrit was monumental, as well as Skelton, as you said. Tough match, and I don't think it's like a really, like I said, I didn't feel like it was a bad performance. So it was just not their day, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I think they deserved, or not deserved, but they'd earned more points than they got. I think they were a lot more dominant in the first half than 16 points represented.
Right. Sure.
So I think they were better. I think they didn't convert enough of the chances that they did have. Which, you know, is their fault ultimately. So I think, yeah, I think they didn't fire on all cylinders, but I think they were more than good enough to win on the day. I wouldn't have said that they were outgunned. I think they matched them pretty well physically.
Sure.
I don't think they were found out anywhere. But I mean, one thing that I found was quite interesting is I think like going into that last kind of 5-10 minutes when they were 6 points behind, it really felt that they needed to score under the poles rather than just scoring. You know, Willems obviously, I mean, there was a couple of instances. There was that disallowed try down the right-hand side with the knock-on in the ruck.
Yeah.
Then Willems does actually break down the left. But instead of gunning for the corner or taking the risky pass inside, he goes for the step. I mean, again, one feels like he was trying to get closer to the pole. But what was very interesting is how many people I spoke to after the game. They said as soon as they put the cross kick in, they knew we'd lost. you know, they're like, there's no way we're scoring from out wide. And look, granted, for Marnie, he got 4 out of 4 kicks. They were all pretty easy first half. But you know, the one that counts, it's unlucky that it just kind of will re-bring up the conversation about his kicking percentage. And no one's not recognizing what he can do on the field as a, you know, general player. I mean, again, perfect cross kick to score the try in the first place. But there's question marks over his goal kicking in clutch moments is concerning, and it's going to be difficult for him to shake that reputation.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's not going to go away. I mean, especially, you know, obviously later in the year, playing some big matches, even at the same stadium against the All Blacks and that sort of thing, weather could be similar. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see. As we both said, it's usually disappointing for the Stormers, but just not the worst performance. And I guess for them now, also, again, just complete focus on the URC, hoping to win their second title. Obviously, they lost disappointingly last year against Munster.
Look, and I think realistically for the Stormers, you know, they would have been getting on a plane, flying to Leinster, getting handed 30 points to them, and then flying home again. So now they can just wait at home instead.
Yeah.
No shame. Maybe they wouldn't have taken 30, but, you know, Leinster are... they are just a class side. You know, so I think it's, you know, it's maybe just saving them a little bit of unnecessary travel. A team that's not doing unnecessary travel is the Bulls. Very, very comfortable win over Lyon with almost touch rugby little plays at certain times. I mean, some of those tries from their own try line were insane. I don't know if Lyon were just not up to the races or whether they were scared of the Pretoria air. But the 7,500 people that did show up were treated some magical rugby.
Yeah, it's just crazy when you see results like that. I mean, just trying to understand why it's one-sided. Just because if you look at Leon's team, I mean, they have international players, they have players who with big match experience. Obviously, traveling from the south of France all the way to Pretoria is pretty far, and there's altitude and there's all these things. But to lose by 50 points is just... yeah, it's really disappointing. And as a contest, as from a neutral, it's also disappointing to see. But at the same time, I mean, we know the Bulls on their day, whether it's Australian teams, whether it's French teams or even Irish teams, when they turn it on at Loftus, it's hard for anyone to stop. So it is hard to know just how much of it was the Bulls being really good and dominant and how poor Leon were, as I sort of only had half an eye on it too. But yeah, a very good result for the Bulls. And like you said, unfortunately, they just have to get on a plane and do it again in England this weekend.
Well, they don't get on one plane. They're getting on, what, seven different flights to try and get over there?
I don't know how
it
makes sense.
Someone sent the travel itinerary. It's insane. I mean, so I never actually saw the thing, but I think people were mentioning that Jake was angry at Sarri about something. And I think it's this ridiculous travel schedule. I mean, half the team is flying via Doha or Dubai. Some of the team are flying direct. But yeah, they get in there in drips and drabs. Some people are traveling for almost 24 hours. One guy is on Virgin by himself. It can be very lonely and sad. We know how pops like to have friends around them. So it's just, I mean, how do you end up in a situation where this is how you're being forced to travel? It's just insane. You know, if someone does manage to get there with all players and no lost baggage, I'll be incredibly impressed.
I just don't understand how it's so poorly organized. I feel like you could just have one dedicated travel person who can sort things out in a better way. Like reading how many different flights and all of the different things that they have to go through, it's a nightmare scenario. And you can understand Jake White being a bit angry. I mean, he doesn't need much to get him going. So this is actually a legitimate thing, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. But looking at the quarterfinals for the Champions Cup, I mean, I would say the Bulls, these flights of flight, has probably got the most winnable one. Lining up against Saints away, who obviously have been going pretty well in the Prem, but dropped down the last couple of weeks and had a relatively close win over Munster. And that's a Munster team that was riddled by sickness. I mean, there's videos of the players throwing up on the field and things like that. So do you think the Bulls have a solid shot at this?
They do. They definitely have a pretty good chance. I mean, out of the quarterfinals, I think this one is likely to be one of the closest. I was quite impressed with the Saints. I watched quite a bit of the game against Munster. And yeah, they're a pretty exciting team to watch, I think, which might be good for the Bulls in the sense that they're less sort of a big upfront team and more of a flashy team. And sometimes Bulls do better against those teams. So I'm really excited. And I think that the Bulls do have a pretty decent chance. And yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think they've definitely got a solid option there. The other two probably more one-sided quarterfinals is Toulouse against Exeter. Yeah. To lose at home there, DuPont and Intermac finally reunited. Who do you see taking that one?
Yeah, I think even before Intermac came back from his injury and DuPont there, Toulouse are just one of the best teams in Europe for however many years and still doing well in France. Exeter are not quite the force that they used to be, but they also did have a good win over the weekend. I think it was against Bath, but definitely would be backing Toulouse there.
And Bordeaux against Harlequins?
Perhaps the tougher one, I think, to call. Harlequins were really good against Glasgow. Glasgow also performed really well, and I think we were relatively unlucky to lose that one. They were just a try away from winning and just couldn't make it count right towards the end of that match. Bordeaux, yeah. I haven't seen any of Bordeaux for a while.
I think they're leading the top 14 in them, and they absolutely obliterated Saracens.
Yeah, and I mean, they do obviously have a good team. They have really classy players like Damien Penaud and a host of other internationals.
Luku, Jalibert, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So they would definitely be favourites for that one. Harlequins would have to go off and pull an upset there, but Bordeaux at home, you would think, would be too strong.
Yeah, and then we get to the real tough one, which is Leinster at home, who weren't dominant over Leicester, in all honesty, hosting La Rochelle, repeat of last year's final, except this time in Ireland.
Where was the final last year?
In France, and I think the previous year was in Dublin.
One of them was France,
one of them was Dublin the last 2 years.
Yeah, and this year it's like somewhere weird. London, yes.
There would never be a London team in the final. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That weird place called London. yeah, so, I mean, again, home advantage, I'd always, just because of that, maybe give it to Leinster. But we saw La Rochelle in the flesh and saw how impressive they were. They obviously have to fly all the way back. I don't know, they'll probably go home and then do the short trip over to Dublin. But Leinster, home comforts, and we know their, you know, so much of their team comes through from the Irish Six Nations team. They sort of have that winning habit in place. I would be surprised if La Rochelle could pull it off, but I would like to see it. It would be impressive. And I will be supporting La Rochelle, but I think Leinster will win.
Yeah, I think I'm probably aligned there, but it's tough. I think it's, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if La Rochelle did, though. Yeah, I think they're probably not the favorites, which is sad, I suppose. But then again, it would be pretty ridiculous to have 3 out of 4 teams being French in the semi. So maybe that's not the worst thing. But cool, I think that's pretty good for a European roundup. Anything else you want to touch on before we move on to Super Rugby?
No, I think that's all. You know, like if our predictions are right, then it's probably 2 French teams, an Irish team, and hopefully the Bulls, but if not, Northampton in the semis. So it would be nice to just see that mix. If Harlequins beat Bordeaux and Bulls beat Northampton, it would be nice to have one of each. So let's hope for that outcome. And then I guess backing the Bulls all the way somehow.
Yeah, the Bulls are going to have to play Leinster or La Rochelle. So
yeah, I mean,
they won't have it easy to get there.
They did beat Leinster in the URC semi that one year, which allowed Stormers to host a final, right? So it's been done. It's been done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, definitely possible. Cool. And in Super Rugby, been an interesting season. Like, I don't think anyone would have called the log the way it is currently. Obviously, the Crusaders having their worst ever run of games, with going, you know, 5 losses in a row to start the season. Conversely, you've got the Hurricanes flying high and the Rebels actually going pretty well despite facing Liquid Nation, sitting, I think, they're on 4th or 5th.
Yeah.
Brumbies and Chiefs are both going pretty well. Up in the top there as well.
Yeah, I think, like you say, of course, even since last time we spoke, the Crusaders have been the most disappointing. They did finally get their first win of the tournament, which was against the Chiefs, and that probably makes the Chiefs look worse. But yeah, I mean, all to play for. Blues, Hurricanes, Brumbies, Chiefs, out of those 4, it looks like the winner will come from. And yeah, can we touch maybe on the Drua? They play really well at home, but then this week, sort of losing their heads and getting 2 red cards. What happened there?
Very weird game. Oh. It's so strange because, I mean, they went, 20-8 up. They were comfortable just before half time. And then, I don't know, maybe, do you think just the pressure of the game kind of closing, getting away from them a little bit? Because I think they'd just gone behind when Lamar needed that. So I think maybe they were just like, maybe just the pressure of being favorites for a change and then losing that lead is getting to them. But yeah, Lamani obviously with that horrible elbow to the head of Josh Cannon, just nasty, yeah. Really unsluggish. And then, you know, not long after, one of the props going for a headbutt. So yeah, it's just bizarrely thuggish behavior.
Yeah, I don't know if they sort of, you know, lost it. They saw red mist or what exactly happened. I mean, the Lamani one, he obviously strikes out, but I don't know if it was more like almost instinctual, which obviously doesn't make it any better, but really bizarre.
Yeah. In a weird way, it kind of looks like, you and you kind of, someone's holding a jersey and you kind of like slap their hand with your forearm.
Yeah.
It's kind of that action.
Right. Because he is getting help, but then, yeah.
I'm not saying for a second it's accidental. Like, you know, it's pretty aggressive contact, and he's kind of, you know, you're going to hit the guy. But it's weird. It's like the same motion just done with the elbow on the head. As I said, very sluggish act. And again, like, you can't headbutt someone in the scrum. Like, what are you doing?
All the Rebels players just standing around being like,
just like,
dude,
mate, what are you doing? I suppose he's lucky he didn't make contact. Although if he did, he would have clapped it on Muffy's chin. So he probably would have done more damage to himself. But like, still, it's just so dumb. So stupid.
Yeah.
Like, you know, luckily they said nothing came of that one, but I mean, you know, the pictures of Cam's head apparently needed 20 stitches. Like, looked pretty gruesome. But that didn't stop Cannon from getting over 50 in fantasy, taking 14 lineouts. Like, a great game.
Yeah. I mean, is he your player? Is that something that you're bragging about? But on that note, Ant,
I don't have any players to brag about.
Yeah, I was just about to say, in case anyone's interested about our draft performance, I'm not doing particularly well. I think I'm third last. But Ant, what's going on? Bottom of URC, bottom of Super Rugby.
Yeah, look, the URC, that's just the legacy of inherited failure that I'll, you know, take on the chin. But Super Rugby has not been my fault. Like, I just had the worst luck. Okay, it didn't help with me drafting half the Crusaders, so that A, half of them weren't playing, and B, the ones that did play were horrible. But, you know, losing three Waratahs before kickoff last weekend, for example, I've had some very horrific luck. And some even this game, you know, I was leading on averages until Charlie Kale just went and got like a million points. And that was despite having like four players not playing. So, I hope for that. How are you looking? Because I think we're playing each other this week. How's your team looking for the buys? Are you going to get routed and suddenly have a chance?
I think last week was my toughest because I had lots of like Hurricanes, Highlanders, Crusaders. So I like to think I'll have a full team, but you'll never know until Wednesday morning, I guess. But yeah, it's been pretty rough for me, starting with Will Jordan being out for the season too, my number one draft pick. So it's not our year, it's not the podcaster's year, but maybe it is Andrew's year. I think he's doing quite well.
Well, let's hope we pin all our hopes on Bird. who's been impressed with you? Who's been kind of the standout Super Rugby players that have been surprised you so far?
I think some of the usual suspects, or one of the really disappointing things, was seeing Roygar go down with injury, just because I think he was looking so, or really just picking up from last year. And I mean, given the way people have been talking about him, he was like, you know, chew in to be the starting All Blacks number nine before his injury. So he was looking really good before the injury for the Hurricanes. Otherwise, I think in the Hurricanes, I've been really impressed with Peter Lakai as well, as a youngster coming through. I think sooner rather than later, we're going to see him in an All Black shirt. For the Blues, for them, it's just, Mark Talia, every time he touches the ball, he's been good. But Perifeta as well, as a number 10 option, he's really put his hand up. So I think it's looking like it's between him and DMAC for the first shot at number 10 in the internationals. And then Australian teams.
I definitely would not have expected Perifeta to be in a conversation at the start of the season.
Well, the thing is, you know, with Moanga and Barrett not there, unless they come back in time, who else really is there?
No, I mean, it's a fair shout. It's just,
yeah,
you know, if you, 12 months ago, if you'd said that, I would have been like, huh? I mean, even saying, you know, Roygaard being, you know, potentially first choice.
Yeah.
Again, it speaks, I suppose, the exodus of players in New Zealand, that you've lost all of these guys. But like, it's surprising. It's going to be interesting to see how that does affect the All Blacks' hopes. Because if you take your 9, your 10 out the picture, take your probably one of your best hookers, your lock. Like, oh no, he's on the verge of scoring to take the lead of just conceded a try against Eagles. Oh, that's frustrating. So they're gonna have to come back here again next week to play them in the semi-final.
Oh shit. Yeah. So who's finishing top of the log then, if it stays like this?
Eagles. Yeah.
Eagles. Yeah.
Anyway, so, as you were. I think that's a good shot of players, but yeah, nothing too spectacular there. I mean, Maholo's been going well, but I don't see him quite breaking to the All Black picture. He's playing fullback for the All Blacks.
It's a tough one, I think Jordy will carry on at 12. Rico's been very quiet and disappointing at 13, but they also have Leonard Brown. They have some other options.
He's been good for me.
Yeah, at fullback, it is a tough. I mean, whose is going to be? I'm trying to think of the options now.
Well, Jordan's injured and Barrett's gone. They've been the only two fullbacks that they've had. And obviously Jordy Barrett. Jordy Barrett's very much anchored to the 12 now, so it's not going to be them.
Stevenson is probably the informed one, I guess.
That makes sense, yeah.
He was called up to the squads, even though he didn't go to the World Cup last year. Narawa is also looking good.
10-15 of DMAC and Stevenson.
That could
actually work out pretty well.
I mean, to be honest, they could just really lean into the Chiefs and have quite a bit of that core. Like you say, No, I don't think Xavier Rowe or even Ratima is going to get called up. Ratima could be a long shot shout, especially with Roygaard out now. They'll probably have some experience with TJ Perenara. Finley Christie obviously is a seasoned campaigner, even though he's not that exciting. But someone like Ratima could be a shock at number nine.
After all that efforts of them getting Fakatawa capped early, they're just not looking at him.
It's a strange one. He just hasn't kicked on. Especially since Aaron Smith isn't there anymore, the hope was that he was going to be the next, big thing down there in Dunedin. He hasn't been bad this year. He hasn't been bad, but it's hard in a disappointing team, and he hasn't quite lit it up as much as, I would think that the New Zealand selectors would like him to have.
I mean, Meekin's been still lining up in the back. I mean, he's a potential 15 bolter.
That's a very good shout. I mean, out of all the Highlanders players, he's definitely the most impressive backline player. I was just trying to think of
it. What about Reece Patchell?
I mean, he's had a couple of nice passes, but no, he's not going to get an All Black call up anytime soon.
How about John McNichol? He can play 15.
I mean, he can.
And when was his last Wales cap?
I don't know. I know he hasn't played in a while because our URC log, URC league, I got to play him a lot during the Six Nations and stuff because he wasn't getting picked
maybe,
up.
Maybe he's, that would be a wild turnaround if he's suddenly the
from a New Zealand perspective, I would much rather than back someone like Neepkins, a youngster over 34-year-old McNichol or whatever he is.
I'd love to see it just because I think it would be hilarious.
Why not just get Corey Jane back while you're at it?
I love the Corey Jane stiff arm, so I'd never say no.
Yeah, it's a classic. But yeah, I mean, in terms of Australian players, it's been a bit rough for them. Like you said, Waratahs picking up injuries. Brumby's looking the strongest. I mean, I'm always hesitant to big up what's his name, the fullback, too much.
All right.
Tom Wright, just because how he might just lose it all in another semi-final and let his team down. they definitely have options, in multiple positions. And even if you look at fly halves, they've got a couple of players that they can back. But they will probably be going through a rebuilding phase now.
Yeah, but I'm excited to see. I think it does feel like there's been a bit of a revolution in Australian rugby to an extent. It just seems to be playing with a lot more positivity. People seem to be excited about the prospects of a new coach and a new season. I think there had been really strong individual performances. I think they're probably their biggest concerns can be front row, with no one really standing out. Angus Bell's gone down now with a worrying looking injury, again considered from a fantasy perspective. But I think that's probably going to be their biggest concern is scrum off. I think Locks and back, they're probably looking pretty good.
Yeah. The props are actually a real concern because Tupou's hardly played. He's come off the bench a couple of times. Ala Alatoa has been out the whole season, so their tight head options are really looking bleak. Johnson Holmes has also been struck by injury more often than not this season, so that is a tough one for them. I don't know who they're going to play at number three.
Thank goodness they're only playing well, so
they could start the Brumbies and beat Wales.
Yeah, I think that's fine. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the international season because there's just so many question marks, but not in bad ways. There's lots of excitement, I think, available for them to pick. So, it's nice to see that Reds loose trio really kicking back Wright and Wilson.
Yeah.
I've always just had a soft spot for them. But then, the Brumbies trio as well, with Rama, Kale, and Valentini also really having some nice balance to it.
Yeah, and especially Kale sort of bursting onto the scene this year so far. So much to your detriment.
Yeah. he's burned me a couple of times. But he's been a great player. Like, real athletic. He's been fun to watch.
But it should be really interesting to see all of the Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, even Argentina, how they go in these tours before the Rugby Championship starts, and just see how they begin to shape their squads, from this beginning of this new World Cup cycle and see how much change there is. Obviously, Australia and New Zealand both have new coaches. We, I guess, technically do as well. So
yeah,
a lot of excitement.
A new old coach.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, I mean, we can be appropriately excited. I mean, we've all had our juices stoked recently by Chasing the Sun. If you haven't watched that or haven't got your hands on it, do, because it is, I mean, obviously we're biased, but I've genuinely thought it's been incredibly gripping TV. But even neutrals or people that aren't that into rugby, the guys that I've spoken to have seen commenting have said that it's some of the best pieces of documentary footage they've seen. Like, and I think there's enough in there for real seasoned rugby fans to really enjoy as well. Like, just some of the detail that they're revealing of the coaches' backroom preparations and the stuff that they're looking at is, it's really insightful, really cool. Not quite as emotionally like heartstringy as the original, but definitely building up the pressure and really kind of letting you feel what the players are feeling in that environment.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed last night's episode. I think just showing some of that, some of like almost the inner conflict in the team was interesting to see between like Dwayne Vermeulen and Evan Etzebeth and Tio Khaleesi. And then also like just seeing some of the coaches, like you say, I think it's, was it the English coach's name? Or is he English or Irish or whatever
Felix
it is?
Jones.
Felix Irish. Jones. Yes, Irish.
He's coaching at England now.
Yes, that's.
So you're allowed to disown him.
But apologies to all the Irish people. Yeah, just seeing his sort of role and the way that he was analyzing other opposition, but also commenting on different strategies they could use. I was really interested in that that sort of almost like a game that they had with the controls and being able to control the positions. You know, it looked better than any rugby game that we've gotten in the last 10 years or 20 years. jealous that we don't get a chance to have a go on there.
Yeah, I thought, why did the Springboks get to custom build this video game for themselves? And you can play as yourself, like, yeah. And you can play as yourself in the Springboks without feeling guilty about it, because you actually are.
I mean, you don't even need... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, go.
I was going to say, you don't even need the graphics. You just need, you know, those... everyone just controls one thing, and you pass the ball, and you go, let's go try it. It looks great.
Yeah. No, what I think stood out for me the most was the elevation of Bongi to that, like, very senior leadership role that... I think it wasn't super apparent. Like, no one, I think outside of the Springbok setup, people don't really regard Bongi as that out and out leader type, but there's obviously something he's doing within the box that demands that kind of respect. You know, so fair play to the coaches for backing him. And I think, you know, I mean, there's the anecdote of Pollard when he was lining up that final kick against France, which, you know, spoilers will come on this week's episode. Just quickly touching on that was a rude way to end, hey?
Yeah.
For a whole week to find out if we won the game.
I was going to say, like, if it wasn't for the fact that we knew what's going to happen next, it would be the worst cliffhanger.
No, this is like full soap opera mode.
Yeah, it's like, next time on Chasing the Sun.
Literally, it's very stressful. But no, like you were saying, when they were debating whether to take a kick or not, and then Bongi was just like, for South Africa, it's us. And he's like, yeah, I guess I'm taking the kick. And then obviously starts it. So
it is interesting. And I think especially with Marks being injured and knowing that how important Bongi is, but also the fact that he has been such a consistent player for so long. And then, like you say, his sort of leadership qualities within the team coming to the fore. It made sense, and it was a really good call by the coaching setup just to push him that much.
Speaking of Marks, do we know if he's going to be back in time for June?
I don't think so. I mean, if he's Khaleesi, in terms of Khaleesi's recovery, he will be, but that would be a super fast ACL recovery, because he would have done it in beginning of late September, beginning October, and 9 to 12 months is usually what you're looking at.
Yeah, but September to June, that's 9 months.
9 to 12 months. Yeah, so there is a chance. There is a chance. So hopefully.
But surely if he's in Japan and he's getting the latest Japanese knee treatment, then maybe. Yeah. But yeah, okay. So we're looking at either Dion Fury or what, Jan Krobler to be backup number hooker? I mean, Dweber's obviously not included in the alignment camps, so we're going to be looking at a new backup hooker either way.
I mean, Dion Fury apparently is injured. I'm not sure how bad his injury is, but he's out for the next at least little bit. he's also 38 or so, but that hasn't stopped him in the past. So it will be interesting. They called up that one Cheetahs guy, but I don't know if that was a sign of things to come or not. So it will be interesting.
Token gesture from Russian off forgetting his roots.
Exactly. Got to make the men in Free State happy.
Yeah. But cool. So looking ahead to that test series, and we probably will bring this up over and over and over, but it's appropriately exciting. The best team in the world, the World Cup winners against the Irish.
Yes, yes, exactly. All the accolades on the one side and then against the Irish.
Well, I mean, they've won a Six Nations against England. Like, cool.
Yeah.
You know, we'd also win a Six Nations against England, like most teams would, except for Northern Hemisphere teams, apparently. How do you see that going? I think the thing that I'm most excited for is it really does sound like the Springboks are going to focus on this properly and take it seriously and really look to get two wins.
Yeah. I mean,
2 out of 2 wins, which is exciting.
I want to see them go, you know, full strength and do as much as they can in the Irish tests. Leave any other tinkering for other matches. And just really drive home the point that this team is capable and more than capable of smashing the Irish, because I honestly think that they are playing to the best of their ability. They definitely easily have it within them to make a noteworthy mark. And I can't wait to see it, especially at home with the Irish traveling. I'm excited. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. But yeah, I want it to be too comfortable. Dominant victories. I don't want there to be any doubt after this that the two's the top side. That's really all I want. I don't know if that's asking too much of that Sagan, but at least it would be nice.
Yeah, for sure. And I think even though the other tours might be a bit less easily matched, you know, just having the internationals around, having England play New Zealand, who knows, maybe Wales will surprise us and be a bit more competitive against Australia. It's all once internationals start, it's all very exciting.
I mean, even England versus Japan will be quite fun. I heard apparently Eddie Jones was already trying to get the kickoff at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something, just to mess with the English. But they pushed back on that.
Yeah, I guess the TV people would push back the most, because 1 o'clock in Japan would just be horrible for our time zones.
Yeah, but it would be funny playing Ping Mara running around in like the 45 degree heat.
Yeah.
Cool, but I think we've managed to cover pretty much everything. That was a whirlwind blast through the rugby month. But I think we did a pretty good job covering it. Is there anything else you'd like to raise before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, we've just kept half an eye on the sevens. We know the Blitz box are having a tough year. Everything really hinges on World Cup qualification now, and that's going to be coming up at the end of the season. That's been disappointing. The women have also been in action. They're building up to also playing some just more test rugby, I guess. They're getting more games under their belt and they're hoping to just keep improving. So, yeah, all the Springbok teams, hopefully there is room for improvement in everyone, and let's just hope that we can keep moving forward.
Yeah, no, it would be good if we could at least make it to Paris for the sevens. We just hope that everyone keeps having some success. So, you know, I think there's a little bit of a weirdness for the rest of us having to become Bulls supporters in June, in Europe next weekend, but you know, I think we'll be able to swallow that pill. But cool.
Go Bulls, go Billy.
It's definitely easier for you.
Well, Billy just about cancels out Jake White, so, you know.
Yeah. All right, cool. Anyway, thank you all for listening. Thanks for joining, and we'll chat to you all next time.
Cheers.